conversation to elites. Now, the thing about galvanizing moments is they can turn into disruptive moments. And those include, in recent history, Occupy Wall Street, the Standing Rock pipeline blockade, the George Floyd movement, the student movement encampments for Gaza. These disruptive moments, they're called that because they disrupt business as usual, the functioning of parts of society or the state, and they all shifted the political debate to the left. Now, granted, the outcome of all these was a mixed bag at best, but nonetheless, that has
30 seconds.
How well do we organize? But I think the main thing is we need a total break from the Democratic Party. And I'm not talking about third parties here. We need to build our own independent political and social power. And that doesn't mean we can't negotiate with the Democrats. We should continue to pressure them and force them, but stop voting for them, stop donating money for them, stop doing door knocking for them. They are worse than useless. They are collaborators in our fascist
regime. Well, don't hold back. We're out of time. That's Arun Gupta. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Thank you, Arun. We'll talk to you soon. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States. And you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through April 15th, you will hear different marathons and series all brought to you by our talented programmers that make KBOO, KBOO. If you would like to listen to all of the fabulous specials, go to kboo.fm/ATNF4.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and having strong opinions about paper money. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I am good. You know, I'm ready for spring break to come. That's all I got to say.
Are you in school?
Yes, I work at a school.
You work in school.
That's why. I'm ready for those kids to go.
All right. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system on kboo.fm. Just click the Chat With Us button in the lower right corner of the window. And KBOO is currently in the midst of our All Thrills, No Frills Volume 4 programming drive. James loves that title. We are featuring all sorts of special content from now to April, like a live bluegrass marathon starting at 9 a.m. on March 29th. And a night of live comedy hosted by Kimberly Nickel on March 28th at 10 p.m. Check out our list of specials at kboo.fm/ATNF4. And before we get started, not one person submitted for the giveaway of Fury of Dracula.
Tut, tut, tut.
I mean, that's okay, but you could have submitted a blank email and won a free out-of-print game. So we're going to keep it open. I'm going to post the whole theme on the episode page on kboo.fm/winnersbias, and we'll give you another shot. You're going to email guesses to winnersbias@kboo.org. Unfortunately, we are going to keep it local. If you can pick it up locally, have someone come pick it up for you, that's fine. We're going to have the whole theme, and you're just going to see how many of the songs you can name, how many songs, how many artists. We're going to keep that open for you all. I need to get rid of this game, people. All right. So today we're talking to Bo Johnson, co-director of Playtest Northwest in Seattle. Welcome to the show, Bo.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we're just going to start simple, get a little introduction to you. So how did you get into the board gaming hobby?
I think it was around Ticket to Ride. We got a bunch of friends together and we were playing Ticket to Ride, but it was told to us that it was a board game about trains, and I was like, whatever. And I remember everybody in the room going, whatever. And one person said they had to leave, they were going on a date. Another person said they were just going to go leave because they were going to go party and whatever. So they played as a team, as one player. What proceeded to happen is that everybody was so hard focused on this game. It was so silent, like 20, 30 minutes in. And I remember, I think 30, 40 minutes in, I looked at the person. I said, aren't you supposed to be on a blind date right now? And she was like, he'll be fine.
You don't know who I am.
Yeah, it was no look up from like the table or anything. It was just like analyzing the trains, where they were going. So funny. From that, it's been loads of board games. I've done Magic the Gathering for years, so it's just like I've played games always.
I sort of, you get deep into the hobby, you sort of miss that like discovery period of like, oh my gosh, this is kind of mind blowing.
That's where I am right now, yeah. And it is very mind blowing. I'm so sorry for you guys that you can't get that anymore. It's disappointing.
That's not true.
Nate said it was, so I'm going for what Nate said.
Well, I mean, arcs. You played Arcs?
I have played Arcs, but I didn't connect with it.
That was like my LSD board game experiment, I guess would be the funniest way to say it, because it was just so like mind expanding that you were like, nobody could win, right? Like that was the nobody could get victory points.
we'll stay with the same designer, because I did play John Company recently, and I was like, what a weird, wild game. Mm-hmm. And like, I just was obsessed with like the whole concept and watched playthroughs online. Mm-hmm. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
What makes these games crazy and that you can't win or get points? What's that? I don't know what these games are.
Yeah, sorry.
No, this is fine.
For the listeners at home.
Yeah, not just for me.
Arcs, and you. Arcs is, I guess, if you were to take a trick taker and then Risk and then duct tape them together, like if you were to take like hearts and like Risk and then just like put them together, it's really wild. Like you have a deck of cards that are actions, and there's a person that is running the suits, right? You know, you would play spades or hearts or whatever, but these suits have actions with them, and it's just wild because you know you're setting what the table is doing, and then if you know they stay in the suit, they may get more actions of that type, but if you need to break away, you only get one action of that type of that card you're playing. And so it's just so fascinating, and you can only claim victory points or claim items to be claimed for victory points if you're the one that's leading the suits, right? So at the very beginning, you would play say a five of industry or something, but you would say, I'm going to make that a zero instead, and then now we're going to choose one of these five settings to be like, whoever has the most of that thing gets victory points. But if nobody takes that initiative and nobody does that, then nobody scores victory points. I mean, my wife and one of our good friends, like, he destroyed all of her ships, all of her bases, and he was like, so I don't get any points? And we're like, yeah, you gotta take the lead, you gotta claim the thing. And he was like, but I at least get a victory point at the end of the game. I was like, no, man.
You get nothing.
You get nothing.
Go home.
Yeah, it was so wild. And I loved every minute of it. And I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
No, that's love great. It.
Yeah. James?
I quickly want to be like, when did Ticket to Ride, one of the games that I haven't actually played, when did that come out? Like, how far ago did that
2003?
Come? 2003?
Around then? Is that right?
Was that long ago?
I can do a little clicky clacky and look it up. You ask the next question. I'll do a little clicky clacky and look it up.
So how did you, was that your first, the game, when you played Ticket to Rides with your friends, was that your first gaming group? Or like, but if they're different, how did you find your gaming group?
No, it wasn't until after I met my like wife, pretty much. It was like I've done video gaming groups, like it was roommates and you just, everybody would sit around and play
the PS2. Best kind of gaming groups.
Yeah, right. It wasn't until after I met my, at the time, girlfriend, now wife. They had a regular gaming group that they would do Dungeons & Dragons, GURPS. But they would also just, first Sunday of the month, they would all get together and we would just meet up at one of their houses and we would just bring games. And a lot of the times it was Magic, but The Gathering. I mean, it's just, they're all older gamers, so it's just like Magic The Gathering. So it's a lot of Ice Age cards and stuff, and you're just... thousands of dollars, unsleeved, whatever. I ranted about that before this. So like, but the thing is that like, after that, then we started getting like, I did get my copy of Ticket to Ride. I got a copy of Dixit. I got a copy of, you know, at the time it was Cards Against Humanity, but that's now somewhere in the deep recesses of like my storage unit or whatever, being unplayed for the last like 7 years. Because there's far better games out there, and that you can be far more imaginative and funnier. But yeah, so like that was the thing, is we were getting those games and it just snowballed, and now it's like we have 400, 500 games. It's really, it's insane.
Wow.
It was 2004. I was off by a year, but I feel pretty good about it.
We'll let you have it.
That's good.
It's good. Time, yeah.
Sorry, Ticket to Ride was 2004, just in case you forgot the context of that.
It would have been, when I played it, was like 2010 when I played it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. You may have already answered this question, but, you know, quickly. Do you have any favorite game or game you think everyone should try?
That's such a hard question. I mean, like, personally... kind of the ones that I get into, startups is a really good one. Dixit is probably like one of the best get to know you games. If you don't know anybody at the table, break out Dixit. Just One. I could also start naming like obscure games. Like,
this is up to you. You can name any game you want.
I think we should just spend the rest of the time seeing how many games you can just list off the top of your head.
I have so many old games that only I love. I mean, the original Dark Tower. Like, I have a copy of that. Anything by Oink, pretty much.
I think that's good. I've been having people play Dropolter lately, which is a silly little game about dropping stuff out of your hand, and it's hilarious.
What about games that you think would be good starting games for someone? So you said good games for people to try. What about like a good starting game to get them into the hobby? I'd be like, this is a game for you to break into it.
Dixit. 100% would be Dixit or Just One, or So Clover. Like, those are the three games that I would heavily say, if you've never played a game before, that will get you. Because those are more, I feel those are better social games, right? Because there's like games where it's, the focus isn't necessarily what's on the table, but it's the people around the table, right? And so those ones are great because it's also helpful to, even if you know the people around the table, it's still funny and still great to like get some of those, like, you know, there's so many jokes capabilities out of like Just One and So Clover, but Dixit is also kind of an interesting one because it's giant tarot cards that has art on it, and the judge, or the, I say it's the active player, has to play their card face down and then give a clue, and then all the other players play their cards, but it's all just different types of art. And I mean, they made a Disney expansion and a bunch of other ones, but it's like, they're great cards with great art, and it's all different art styles and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, it's going to be a long time before you're going to see that card again, unless the shuffler's broken, you know.
My favorite thing about Just One is the answer to every rules question someone has is Just One.
Yeah.
Just One. Just one word. That's all.
We have a friend, they won't be named, but he tried to write down what it was in Italian. And we were like, you can't do that, man. And I was like, that's cheating.
All right. So when did your interest in playtesting games start? And are you a designer as well?
I am, yeah. Not only am I a member, I'm also a client with Playtest Northwest. 2017, we would do a Sunday game day, and one of our friends was like, hey, let's play my game. And it was like this weird concept where, you know, it was like, what do you mean? He's like, it's my game.
And I was going to ask, like, how do you feel when a friend presents you with that question?
Yeah, it was a very weird one. And so, like, we ended up playing their game. It was kind of a take on Shadow Hunters, but it was basically Hidden Identity. You're moving around like a ship. I think you were trying to escape the ship or trying to stop people from escaping the ship. I think it had like kind of an Aliens-esque kind of thing going on with it as well. After we got done with it, I remember being in the car, you know, I looked at my wife and I was like, why don't we make a game? He made a game. Why can't we make a game? And then, like, we were goofing around with it. I was like, we play so many games, so we know how games work. And so we legitimately started working on a game, and we didn't know where to go. Like, it's just you don't know what to do next. So, like, you find a new hobby, and it's just like, okay, well, like, I like to, you know, I like to make furniture out of wood. You're like, well, where do I get the wood? You know, like, you may have gotten wood somehow, but now you're like, where do I get more wood? You know,
where do I get the fancy wood?
Yeah. Yeah. Where do I get the walnut? And then it was just like, after what ended up happening is I found out about Playtest Northwest, and I started going to their events. And I playtested our game a whole bunch. And it was just something that I really enjoyed, because you got to meet, like, it wasn't just like making a game, but it was also meeting the community. It was finding, like, it was pretty cool stuff. You know, when you get into like a new hobby and you're starting to meet people in that community that do it, it's like really interesting, because then it's like you may recognize somebody that's like done something before, or like, you know, so you'll have like infamous people that you'll kind of like go to. And now it's like, it's funny because I just talk to them normally, and it's just so funny. So it's such a sort of thing.
Out of my own curiosity, what was the time frame from like being like, hey, we should make our own game, to being completed, or like getting close to completed? How long did that take?
Oh, from like the genesis of like we should make a game to like pretty much it's like the game's done, right? Well, 2018, right around July 2018 is when we started working on it. I think I started working on it the week after my birthday, and I took it to a friend's house. We had our friends play it. They were like, this is too long, and we were like, yeah, sorry. And then after that, we were finding ways to like cut it down. We started doing kind of the circuits, like we were doing like packs, you know, because they do like, you know, Playtest Northwest would do stuff at conventions, and so I was showing off my game at PAX West, and you know, we were doing Dragonflight and doing OrcaCon and doing all these things, and we were just showing our game. I would say our game is, you're not supposed to say this, I know, as a game designer or whatever, our game is like in a done state. It's taken about a couple of years, right? But I mean, not like that game is also a very big game. Like, I don't want to get too much into it, but it's like a stock market game. So like it has a lot of gears, a lot of moving parts. It's worker placement. It's a whole bunch of stuff. That took 2 years. The other game that I'm currently working on, that took like 4-6 months, and then it was like, we're done. Like, there's nothing more we could do with this, right? Because nice.
Awesome. We're going to do a quick reset here. So you're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking to Bo Johnson about playtesting board games. Just a reminder that KBOO is loaded with special programming from now until April as part of the All Thrills, No Frills Volume 4 programming drive. Learn more about it at kboo.fm/ATNF4. So, Bo, what makes a good playtester? You getting all this feedback about your game, people telling it's too long and all that. So, what makes people playing the game valuable. That's a terrible way of phrasing it. They're all valuable in their own way. But what makes them good at playtesting? Do they go through an orientation process?
No. Could you imagine? No, like, it's just what makes a good playtester is somebody that is playing the game, right? When you're kind of trying to figure out, I mean, that's the main thing, is that as we've been doing playtesting, it was like, when we did our first game, it was like, what's making our game faster? What's making our game this? What's making this better? What's making that better? We were like kind of focused on kind of like the various granularity. But in the case where like a playtester, anybody is going to play your game. As long as they play your game, that's what you need. Like, you want people that have played games, you want people that haven't played games, right? Because that's the whole point with some of this playtesting, is that you're trying to get that scope. And it's crazy because you have that scope of playing games and not playing games. And that really affects, like, well, you kind of also see, it's not going to be fun just somebody that doesn't play games on the regular, but it is fun somebody that plays games on the regular. So it gives you a lot of interesting feedback to kind of to get anybody that's just a playtester. That's the most important thing, is that the willingness to kind of sit down and play through a game and kind of, you know, give feedback, like, you noticing things like what's I try, and a lot of game designers want, when they're doing feedback, they want to hear what's positive about the game. You don't want to hear what's negative about the game, sure. But that also varies in game designers. I love it when people are not pleased with my game. Like, you are priceless as gold to me if you're like, I hate this. And I'm like, awesome, tell me. Like, just let it go. This is just going to be like a big therapy session. But yeah, it's just I want that scope, right? But in most typically with game designers, and when you're doing playtests, like, the positive feedback. We want to know what's fun. A game is supposed to be fun. Some games are not supposed to be fun, and that's by their design. But like, when we make games, we're making games for fun. We want it to bring people back. You want to make it a challenge. We want to do it this or that. And so with those playtesters, it kind of reinforces what's good in the game, right? The negative feedback, it can be a little rough for game designers. Like, we have a big community of game designers in Seattle that we kind of meet up on the regular through Playtest Northwest events. And it's interesting because, you know, that the negativity, we've really scaled back on negativity. And that's great. That's a really good thing, because we want to focus on that fun. But sometimes it's like, well, I didn't like this because I think that's not fun. I don't like take that mechanics. And that's good feedback, because it'll let you know, okay, well, you know, we're getting a lot of people that are like, this is very take that. And like, maybe the audience or the people you're trying to like show this game to, maybe that might be a bad thing, right? So it is very interesting. I just, as long as you play test games, that's what I need. That's what I want.
Is it, like, because you mentioned, like, sometimes, like, with the negative comments, is it hard to separate from, like, people just being like, I don't like this because I don't, because that's not what I like, from being like, that actually is good information of something they said is bad, if you get what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is it hard to be like, you know, I should ignore that one because that's just their opinion about some kind of game factor they don't actually like, and it's not affecting the game?
It's interesting because, like, I made a comment that, like, our second game that we're working on, we only playtested it for 6 months, but we still show it off at events and a lot of conventions. And we found that after that 6 months, we weren't really playtesting the game, because people, they're on adrenaline high, right? It's an active game, right? It's an active party game. So everybody's moving around, and when they're done, like, they just have all this extra energy, right? Like, I tell you to run for like 30 or 45 minutes, right? When you're done running for 45 minutes, you still kind of like, you're still up on that high adrenaline, that energy, right? Because that's where your body was. So it was really interesting, because like, people will clean up the table, and I'm like, don't have to, but they're like, their hard focus, just like, I have to clean this up because I don't know what to do with all this energy now. Which, I'm sorry, people that have play tested my game, but it's there was a point after that 6 months, it was just we were more playtesting people. And I think you as you start to kind of get into doing more and more playtesting, you're kind of getting into like what you're looking back for feedback and that sort of thing. You also see the playtesters, you get kind of types of playtesters. You can kind of get a feel of like, okay, this person does a lot of heavy board games, right? Because they're talking in terms, you know, like if I have to explain what a deck builder is, I know exactly you are not a person that's probably played any deck building game. Like you haven't played Dominion, for example, right? So like I have to like come back and be like, this is how a deck builder works and that sort of stuff. Like you get an understanding of, as you're going through it, when you're doing the pitch and the rules read and all that other stuff, you get the understanding of people and what their gameplay style is within first like probably 10 or 15 minutes, or even before they even start playing your game. You get a read on people. You're like, okay, well, this is a person that really likes poker. This is a person that is super confident. This is a person, you know, that is going to be very boastful and loud. And then like this person's going to come up and they're going to be like, I guess I'll play the game. I'm like, okay, so this person's going to be very reserved. So if there's any conflict, it's going to be very kind of interesting, giggly for like the first like 5-10 kind of sessions where they're doing it. You just get that read on people. And I feel that once you start to kind of get a read on what playtester that you have that's giving you the feedback, you have to kind of also document that kind of mentally. That'll help you when you're doing that as well.
Yeah. So this might be the last question because it's big and well, not the time just flies, right?
Yeah, we didn't even.
Yeah, so many.
But like, what drives people to design games? Is it like to get published for the challenge, something for their family, friends? Especially because there's like thousands of games getting published every year, and it's like, you know, are you even going to be able to make a dent in that? Like, so what's driving the people coming to Playtest Northwest?
It's a lot of things. I mean, within the last couple of years, like we've kind of had the we were stuck at home, like .. You get that, like that intro when you meet up with them in an event and like, you're stuck at home and we played Monopoly a whole bunch of times and we're like, Monopoly is not a good game. Sorry, Hasbro. And then we're like, well,
it is a profitable game though.
Hasbro is going to come after us now.
No, I'm so sorry. I love Monopoly. don't come after this radio station for my words. But it's an interesting thing because a lot of people, I think, you know, it's my thing. Why don't we play games? Why don't we do something? I think that's a common thing, is that when people get into a hobby, a lot of people will try to dabble and be like, well, maybe I can X or Y, you know? And it's interesting because I think it's just that creative drive. You know, people watch Bob Ross and they'll pick up a paintbrush and realize that Bob Ross is just impossible to keep up with when you're trying to paint. But it's just, you know, you keep doing it and you make something better. I think it's just people get into these hobbies and especially with board games, it's not the same as reading a book. It's not the same as watching a movie. It is an interactive, It's an interactive event. And it really like can transform things. I mentioned Dixit being a really good one. Dixit, our copy of Dixit has been used in so many weird situations that you would never imagine like board games being used in. We played, I think, two games of Dixit waiting for my father's like heart surgery to finalize. And we just played it in the waiting room and we were just like the only people in the corner. And it's just like the next day we were playing Dixit with, you know, the family and my father-in-law is like recovering and he was playing Dixit with us. And it's just an interesting thing, is that you have these experiences and then you're like, I want to, the drive to make these experiences is huge, you know? So I think it's just like people want to share and build and create and invite people into being like, you know what? I had such a good thing. Like, come with me. I want to show you a game where you have to mine gems out of a mountain and then you have to fill it with like dwarves to mine those gems. It's like, and then the stock market changes. Like, that's not a good example. That game is whatever.
Sounds fun. I'm in.
Was that in the Hall of the Mountain King?
No, that was, okay. That was the first game that we worked on.
Okay, gotcha. Before we go, do you have how can people get involved with Playtest Northwest? Is there anything that you want to tell the people out there?
Yeah, if you are interested in designing a game, if you're interested in playtesting a game, you're interested in just gaming in general, and you want to kind of learn more about it, you want to see what's out there, playtestnw.com is our website. There's all sorts of information. I have a blog. We're trying to populate it with information. This radio show will probably be a blog post because that's easy. But yeah, other than that, that's the where you want to go.
Awesome. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you for driving down from Seattle. That's just incredible. I really appreciate it.
It's an easy drive.
And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kboo.org. And you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. That's it. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you enjoy the program today, please consider showing your support by making a donation. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And be sure to check out our All Frills, No Frills Volume 4 programming at kboo.fm/ATNF4. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you find that mind-blowing game. Have a good one.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again, and that means brand new metal.